This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last time, Douglas introduced Ruby and Edie to his housebound, war-injured friend, the enigmatic Frank Pierce. Ruby faces more choices than she had expected.
What do you think of my splendid cane, Tinkerbell? Isn't it a corker? Frank held it up so they could see the brass tip on the end of it. It was my grandfather's. He was a man with great flair. When I was your age, I used to wish I could use it when I grew up. And here we are. Debonair, like Burlington Bertie. He stretched one side of his braces with his thumb and let it ping back.
It is rather fancy, Edie said with a shy giggle. And it's very old.
His face creased in a broad smile. How old are you, Tink? 11? Not 12.
I shall be eventually, Edie said, putting her shoulders back. I'm starting at a new school after the holidays. What school is it, Mum?
Ruby frowned at her. We'll talk about all that later. Wherever it is, you'll like it, I'm sure, said Frank.
I might not, Edie said.
Frank chuckled noiselessly. Ruby, he said. Douglas told me all about you. All good things, I assure you.
I doubt it, Ruby smiled, pleased.
I doubt it too. How long has it been since you met? Days? Weeks? It matters not. Typically, Douglas has always had an eye for beauty.
Seeing Douglas entering, he added, Haven't you, dear?
Douglas showed no sign he'd heard. He set out the china cups and saucers, got a glass for Edie, and took a jug of milk from the refrigerator.
Have we still got cordial?
He asked Frank. Edie's eyes flickered between the two men. Ruby did not miss the appropriative we.
Give Tink some milk, I think. Don't you? Said Frank. But do take away the glass. You know I cannot bear to see milk in a glass. There's a very pretty mug with rabbits on it. At the back of the left-hand cupboard, use that.
Ruby watched Douglas meekly obeying this direction, his mouth closed, not looking at anyone. He was behaving like Frank's butler, and it annoyed her. If she loved someone, and was loved in return, it wouldn't be like that.
I reckon Ruby's a woman with hidden depths, said Frank.
She hoped it was nothing more than good-natured teasing. She wasn't sure whether she liked him.
I suppose we'll have to see, she said, feeling rather inane.
At this he laughed, a large open-mouthed laugh.
You'll do, he declared.
One tin of cream of chicken soup, thinned with milk, wasn't enough. Douglas, cheered by the hot soup and the banter between Edie and Frank, opened a second tin and made more toast. Edie wasn't going to need anything more to eat when they got back to Arcadia.
Mother had plans to buy a new stove, said Frank. Don't know what stopped her. She bought the Frigidaire first instead,
God knows why. The safe's been good enough. I should... He stopped. Ruby gave Edie a hard stare to stop her scraping the bowl with her spoon. Shall I serve us some more? She asked. Do, do, Frank said. Tink first. The second serving of hot soup had just been ladled out, when knocking on the frame of the open back door was followed by a shrill call.
Yoo-hoo! It's only me!
Jesus Christ, said Frank, not quite under his breath. He let his spoon drop into his dish and clamped his teeth together. The matronly woman, bearing a large cake tin, must have heard him.
Mr. Woods,
she said, acknowledging Douglas with a dry tone.
I saw the car. Oh, hello! I didn't realize you had proper visitors, Frank.
Proper visitors? A giggle climbed Ruby's throat. She put her fingers over her mouth and looked at the woman's tight face. The giggle died. They're friends of Douglas's, said Frank, without looking at her. This is Mrs. Barton and Edie, said Douglas.
Ruby will do, said Ruby. Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Barton.
The woman's eyes flitted from Ruby to Edie and to the bowls of soup. She spared a scowl for Douglas, before turning back to Ruby.
Violet Wojciechowski. Bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Everyone calls me Vi. I didn't realize you were having a late lunch.
It was my fault, said Ruby. I asked Douglas to take us for a Sunday drive first.
Nice day for it, I'm sure, said Vi. The cold will set in soon.
Frank stared into his soup and clinked the spoon against the bowl petulantly.
I see that lawn will be up round your knees soon, Vi said. Mine's not much better. That lad was supposed to come last week.
His uncle's got a farm. Perhaps he's helping, Douglas said.
Vi lifted her shoulders and sniffed.
Not even the courtesy to tell us he was going on holiday. Shall I get one of the scouts onto it for you, Frank? Or will Mr. Woods make some time to take care of it for you?
Douglas shuffled, and Ruby thought she heard Frank make a low hissing sound.
Anyhow, Frank, said Vi, I brought you some of my passion fruit queen cakes, made this morning. I'll pop back later.
Not today, said Frank.
He noisily supped some soup.
Bye-bye, then, she said. I might see you again, Ruby. I'll pick up the tin tomorrow, Frank, when I do your sheets. Oh, and Mr. Woods, do make sure his milk bottles go out tonight, won't you? Last time you were here, he forgot.
As she left, Frank threw the spoon in his bowl, splattering the soup, and rose awkwardly to his feet, bumping the table.
I swear to God, Ruby, he said. If you read in the paper of a woman being murdered in Elmira Avenue, it'll be because I've finally done that harpy in.
Edie's spoon was paused midway to her mouth, and soup dripped as she looked at Ruby, as though she was searching for answers to questions she had no words for.
It was only Mother's bloody Christian fortitude that had her put up with that damned... Frank stormed.
The soup was lukewarm now, and the butter had sunk into what was left of the toast. Frank leaned on the bench, trembling. When Douglas took him in his arms, Frank sagged, sobbing.
Is there anything I can do? Phone a doctor? Ruby said.
Edie had her head down, staring into her soup. Douglas's face was grim.
Give us a moment. I'll get him to his room and give him his dose.
She saw perfectly how it was. Frank was more fragile than Douglas had intimated. If Vi did mean well, she had no sense. Or worse,
She wanted him to need her, needed him to need her, and she kept reminding him of it. Bustling her way in, rubbing his affliction in his face like that, the woman might as well have come out and said he was no use to anyone, or even to himself anymore. Ruby felt the sting of Frank's humiliation. As Douglas slowed to take a bend in the road on their way back to Arcadia, Ruby spoke. "Will Frank be all right? Will you go back tonight?"
"I'd like to."
"Do. He needs you."
"You see what I mean now?"
"About Vi? Yes. About Frank? Yes."
"I try not to spend too much time there. I pop in when I can, usually Sundays, to see how he's getting on."
A clatter behind her seat made Ruby turn. Edie had dozed off. Vi's tin, the lid still firmly on, was on the floor. "Vi seems very fond of Frank," said Ruby.
"Her boy, Nigel, was killed in Egypt. I suppose that's why she's more or less taken Frank over."
"I see."
"Putting it like that sounds cruel, doesn't it? Maybe she does it out of loyalty. She and Mrs. Pierce were close."
Ruby remembered Vi's quick, beady eyes forming unspoken, prying questions, manufacturing conclusions.
"I'd like to think she means well," said Douglas, "but I can't shake the feeling."
"What?"
"Vi's at the window," he said, "keeping watch every time I go around to see him. And she always makes some excuse to barge in."
His voice broke in a sob.
"It wouldn't matter if I could be sure Vi wasn't simply gauche, you know. If only she saw me as Frank's old chum looking in on a comrade who's slowly falling to pieces."
"You'd rather she thought that?" He slowed and pulled to a curb between street lamps where the light was dimmest. He turned the engine off.
"Let's have this out."
His voice wavered.
Do you recall my telling you about Allison?"
"Yes. You said you couldn't stay married to her."
"We were granted an annulment. We'd never, you know."
Edie was still asleep, curled across the seat, mouth open, her head pillowed on her hands. Ruby knew what was coming. "Not consummated." It felt awful saying it bluntly like that. Douglas nodded and lit a cigarette.
"I agreed to let everyone say I'd run off with another woman."
"And you hadn't?" He gave a wry snort.
"Of course not."
"I see."
"Do you, though?"
His eyes were on her as she nodded. She knew very well what was at stake. Until she went to Rat's Nest, she'd known little about the world, and little about men, other than that she didn't like them. She'd been ignorant, even if her innocence was lost. She knew about old men like her father, who liked to finger little girls, and she knew about the men who paid for her company, and those who frequented Moe's guest house. She knew about the Barrys of this world, and their pawing and their panting. Along with the rough education of Moe's business operation, she got to know the handful of men Moe employed for their fists. Thugs with a cruel streak, like Moe's favourite fearmonger, Lou Watkins, nicknamed Breaker, for the pleasure he took in his job of punishing any of the girls who tried to cross Moe. As a youngster on the streets, he'd gained a reputation as a vicious, bantamweight, bare-knuckle fighter who gambled on himself and won. It was he who broke in any hapless young girls new to the trade who were desperate enough to fall into Moe's clutches. In her time there, Ruby learned the details of men who lived at the other end of the scale. Men who didn't want women. Men people labelled poofters, pansies, queers, living in fear of discovery, arrest and prison, or worse.
She'd sometimes been hired to accompany flamboyant, intelligent men to classy events where she played the part of a fiancée, a niece or a sister, to cover for their preference for men. She knew there were men who sought the company of other men with the same proclivities. And the hunters. And then there was Mo Hanrahan's only son, Joseph. A very different kettle of fish, neither intelligent nor flamboyant. His mother gave him his own sideline running a few boys, runaways he picked up and sent to prowl the shadows of the waterfront. In spite of his vicious reputation, behind Mo's back, the other henchmen referred to him as Josephine, or Feeney, and the moniker stuck. He didn't care. Hard labour might break most men, but Feeney had served 3.5 years hard labour in Mount Eden for committing an unnatural offence on a boy, and came out meaner than he went in. Douglas unwound the window to tap ash onto the street.
You've gone quiet. I'm worried that what I've said...
Well, now she knew where she stood, and she saw how a snooping neighbour might put Douglas, if not Frank as well, in peril. Honestly, she said, you don't have to be worried. I understand more than you know. He studied her.
Seems you might have stories of your own buried in there.
She squirmed. Hasn't everyone? She steered the conversation back. I can't help feeling sorry for Alison, though.
Oddly, she didn't seem too cut up about it. It bothered me for a long time, letting her down. I think I loved her, in a way. Of course, it was up to me to play the heel to keep her reputation intact, save our parents the embarrassment. I left Stratford after that.
Stratford? Not the best time to quiz him about where that was. He wiped his eyes with his hand, opened the car door and left it hanging while he walked away to blow his nose into his handkerchief. When he returned, he clicked the door closed gently and got into his seat and glanced over at the sleeping Edie.
It's not enough. His voice cracked. Every time I leave him, I feel myself bleeding on the inside. You know those soppy songs about leaving your heart with someone? For me, it's my heart. My guts.
He hunched over the steering wheel. Ruby didn't know what to say. His passion astonished her. His pain reached into her. Is that what it was like to deeply love another person? She suddenly needed warmth, and she put her hand between her breasts.
Mum?
Edie's voice.
Are we here? Why have we stopped?
Shh. Soon. Mr. Woods just had to blow his nose.
Sounds like you've caught one hell of a cold, said Edie.
Language, Ruby admonished.
Sorry, Uncle Douglas.
Edie yawned.
Are we going to have queen cakes when we get in?
Uncle? Already? We'll share them. Ruby put her hand on Douglas's shoulder as he started the engine. Douglas is dropping us off at Arcadia, and then he might be going back to Frank's.
Good idea, said Edie. Frank might be lonely otherwise, and he can make you hot lemon and honey drinks for your cold.
Be quiet now, Ruby said with tenderness.
I told you, didn't I?
Janice crowed at morning tea.
I knew Madam would be impressed with your new look.
I really like it. Ruby ran her hand over her head. Earrings would set it off too. If I had anywhere to go.
You and I should go to the pictures, said Janice with sudden excitement.
What was the strange word Madam used when she saw you?
Something foreign,
Whatever it was, she was really pleased, wasn't she?
They didn't hear Madame on the stairs.
Enough chatter. Madame was smiling. You certainly have a good eye for shape, Janice. I like that. Today there are new hats to shape. I have these drawings.
When Madame took Janice off to the blocking room, Ruby uncovered the bride's hat that awaited finishing. It was hard to believe it had only been 2 days since she'd put the dustcloth on it. Madame's system of leaving unfinished pieces and notions on the trays made it easy to pick up where she'd left off. She rubbed her hands with talcum powder and examined the bride's pleated satin hat on its pupette. Madame had already marked the placement of the faux pearl beads with blue tailor's chalk.
Janice said we should go to the pictures, said Edie, lowering her book.
I think she meant she and I going to a grown-up film, said Ruby. I'm not sure I care to go.
I bet you would if Uncle Douglas asked you.
Don't you be fawed like that. You don't know what you're talking about.
If you did go, said Edie, who'd look after me?
Well, there you are. I'm not going. Haven't you still got beads to count? Edie tucked her legs up and rested her chin on her knees.
I'm getting fed up. This is the worst school holiday ever. I wish I wasn't here.
Please, just shut up. With a look of mock reproach, Edie whispered,
Isn't shut up a kind of swear word?
If only Edie had an off switch like a radio.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.